It's always a pleasure to be here at the Fields Institute. I am grateful to the organizers for the invitation to attend. I'm not sure about to speak. I don't know why, but for some reason, this particular room makes me more nervous than any other room I'm aware of. So I apologize if I get off to a somewhat shaky start. So the first thing I want to talk about is... No, I think this is plenty. So, I mean, the other one is the room at Evanston, because the first time I spoke there, I sort of wrote something about, you know, I made the mistake of writing down the E2 term of the atom spectral sequence and suddenly switching to cohomology. And Mark Mahold said, well, why did you switch to cohomology there? And I had no idea what he was talking about. It was just a pure accident that I had switched, right? And so, oh my goodness, every time I go back there, I hear the voice of Mark Mahold. Okay, so I want to talk about, unfortunately, so the theme of this conference is supposed to be progress since 2006, was it? And unfortunately, 2007. And unfortunately, the work of my own that I'm going to talk about is older than that, and many of you have heard it before, but there are two interesting new developments that I want to tell you about that I think are very interesting. One is this sort of work of Distler and Sharp, and the other is the work of my student, David Lipsky. And but to set it up, I'm going to tell you sort of an old story about equivariant elliptic cohomology. So I'm going to tell you about equivariant elliptic cohomology and representations of loop groups. And then I'm going to tell you about sort of equivariant elliptic cohomology and the sigma orientation. Then I'm going to sort of explain how 1 and 2 are sort of related. And then I'll tell you about some sort of exotic elliptic genera. And then I'll tell you about where these elliptic genera, so the new work of Distler and Sharp. So these exotic elliptic genera were sort of investigated by Kefeng Liu and then myself a number of years ago, but they're among the elliptic genera that for a long time had no physical interpretation. And so in 2007, Distler and Sharp gave an interpretation of these elliptic genera in terms of fiber WZW models. And then I'll tell you about this work of Lipsky's work. But then I have to lift it. Maybe the problem is that it's embarrassing that I lack the strength to move this board. Lipsky's co-cycle model. Okay. So let's suppose that G is a connected compact Lie group. And let's suppose that it has a maximal torus T with a vowel group W. And let's let blackboard bold T be the circle group. And so this thing is just the lattice of co-characters of the maximal torus. Then there's this idea, let's see. So it's not too difficult to see what, it's not, we know what the equivariant K theory of the torus is. It is a Laurent polynomial ring on rank generators. And a sort of invariant and geometric way to write that is to take spec. Each of these gives a copy of the multiplicative group. So this is the multiplicative group, and I need as many copies of that as I have the rank of the group. This equality, I've been talking to physicists, and so everywhere where I say equals, I probably mean is isomorphic to. So let's see, this isomorphism is not canonical, but this isomorphism actually is. And sort of motivated, and then, so you can do the same thing if you want to study the G equilibrium. All right. Oh, and now I'm doomed, right? So now if you want to analyze the G equilibrium K theory of a point, well, we know that that's the Weyl invariance in the representations of the torus. Remember, G is a connected compact Lie group. So if I take spec of this, that is GM. And now you can see the virtue of writing this, the representations of the torus in this pretentious way. It's because written this way, it has a canonical action of the Weyl group. And so this quotient makes sense without my saying anything else. Okay. So motivated by this, various people, Ginsberg, Kapranov, Bassereau, and Ian Granovsky in the 90s, realized that obviously the G equivariant elliptic cohomology of a point should be the same thing with the multiplicative group replaced by whatever elliptic curve you're thinking about. So there are various proposals for constructing an elliptic cohomology like this, but Ian Granovsky gave the first complete construction I'm aware of. He constructed G equivariant elliptic cohomology where C is a complex elliptic curve. So we should think of this elliptic curve as being C modulo a lattice or something like that. But you can allow that lattice to vary through the family of lattices. So it's a modular construction. Okay. But and I guess to emphasize, since I've written a space here, unlike K-theory, this K-theory, it doesn't make much difference whether you talk about spec or you talk about the ring itself because it's an affine thing. This C, of course, is not affine. So when I write this, I really want to think, I'm going to write the space associated, I'm going to write sp instead of spec, because I really mean think of G equivariant elliptic cohomology as a space. Okay, it's really some kind of, if you want to think of it as a ring, you can't think of it as an affine ring. It's got to be the sheaf of functions on that. Okay. So there's some space. Well, there's some really cool things about this. One really cool thing about this is that, I went through that spiel about K-theory to my trying to make this object seem a little bit mysterious. It's just rank copies of the elliptic curve with an action of the Weyl group. Well, it turns out that there's a map from H4 of BG with Z coefficients to pick of this thing, which I'm just going to call MG. It's the space associated with the G equivariant elliptic cohomology of a point. So let's see if G. Is simple and simply connected. And this is isomorphic to Z. And so for every integer, I get a line bundle. Let's just take the integer K. Okay, this is actually just the basic one, L1 to the kth power. Okay, and here's the first fact. The first fact, which is really cool, is that representations of the loop group, loops G, of level K. Well, the character of such a thing is a section of this L to the K sitting over MG. And the Katz character formula implies that this map is actually an isomorphism. So that tells you that the G equivariant elliptic cohomology of a point encodes the representations of loop groups. The level appears because you have to take this kth tensor power. So Let's see. That takes care of one. Now let me tell you about two. Okay, so let's take L, just the first tensor power of this line bundle. Okay, then if G, now I'm going to take G to be an even dimensional spin group, then there's an evident, there's a particularly preferred, well, there's an interesting level one representation. Namely, the spin representation, it's actually a virtual, it actually decomposes a spin representation of loops G of level one. The character of that is therefore a section of this, and it's just given by products of the Weierstrass sigma function. Okay, so the Weierstrass sigma function gives a section of this line bundle. Well, it's a holomorphic section, but it's not non-vanishing. It has zeros. So this thing is not a trivialization of this bundle, but it is a trivialization of this bundle tensored the ideal sheaf of zeros of sigma. Okay. Nothing to that. It's just a sort of, I want to write sigma as being a trivialization of something, and there it is. The thing that's sort of not completely obvious is, now suppose that I have a space X, and over this I have a spin 2 vector bundle V. Okay, so this thing has an associated principal bundle P with structure group this G. Okay. Then I can take the space associated to the elliptic cohomology of X. I can map it into here. Ah, so the non-obvious thing is that there's a map. That's why I have this green chalk. There's a map here, which I'm going to call F sub B, because I want to emphasize that it's built from this data, really from this principle. Okay. Well, since I have this map, I can now pull back this bundle, and I can pull back all of this structure. So I get a bundle LV. And a bundle I'll call I sigma, IV, I mean, and I got a trivialization of it, sigma IV. So one point I wanted to make, let me remind you that this L came from a map from H4 of BG to PIC of MG. That's the source of this L. And then I took a generator here and sent it to here. That means that this line bundle, I've written it LV, but it's completely determined by the second churn class of V. Okay. So I have this line bundle here, determined by the second churn class, and I have this thing. Okay. So there's a proposition. The proposition, which I'll put in green, is that the map F of V exists, and moreover, once F of V exists, you can pull all that stuff back, and the second thing is that IV is really just the elliptic cohomology of the Thom space of V. What do I mean by that? Well, this is some kind of space, the elliptic cohomology of X. The elliptic cohomology of X to the V is some kind of module over that, so it's a sheaf over this space. So if I take the associated sheaf, that sheaf is just isomorphic to this. Okay. And the conclusion is that if, so the corollary of this, if C2 of V equals 0, if the second churn class of this bundle is 0, then L2V is trivial. And so sigma of V is a trivialization. Well, sigma V always trivializes that tensor product, but now L is all separately trivial, so L is sigma V trivializes I of V, which is just the elliptic cohomology of the Thom space, and that's the sigma orientation. So that's kind of interesting. Let me say about this result here that I had a piece of, oh, there it is, a piece of blue chalk. Let me say about this result that this result is all secretly, and now I'm going to borrow, thank you, Gerd, a trick of Gerd's, which is just to say, just to do this and put an S1 over here, and to say that really this is a statement about, this is a really, all of this can be and has been done S1 equivariantly. So I'm not really just speaking about a principal G bundle. I'm really speaking about, for example, in this story, an S1 equivariant principal G bundle. Okay? And I'm secretly speaking about S1 equivariant elliptic cohomology and G cross S1 equivariant elliptic cohomology here. Well, actually, the S1, I projected away the S1. In any case, this is a construction of the S1 equivariant sigma orientation, and the construction via this picture is the work of Greenleaf and myself. Okay. Let's see. Now, there's a sort of striking thing about this. And now, which is that you can see from this point of view, so this is 2, you can see from this point of view that on the one hand, there is sort of this bundle L. L, by the way, is for Lu Yenga, who constructed L1, or L to the 1. Okay, this line bundle L sort of plays a really fundamental role both in the construction of sort of relating equivariant elliptic cohomology to representations of loop groups, on the one hand. And it also plays a fundamental role in understanding the sigma orientation. Indeed, from this point of view, sigma appeared as the character of this representation. Okay. So it's a natural thing to ask whether you can mix the two together. And in fact, you can. The observation that you can is due to Kefeng Liu. So let me now explain that. So let's see. To mix these two things together, I'm going to suppose that I have V sitting over X. That's going to be a G vector bundle. G is like spin 2D, is G spin 2D just like over there. And I'm also going to suppose that I have V prime here. I guess secretly V, in by the time I was done, V was secretly a virtual bundle, okay? But here, I'm going to make the virtual bundle very explicit by having an auxiliary vector bundle V. Okay, so here I have V, here I have V prime, and it can even have a different structure group of the same kind. It should be like spin 2D for a different D, spin 2D prime, okay? And let's suppose, so for this one, I'm going to use sigma, the character of the spin representation of loops G. But for this one, I'm going to choose theta, okay? By this thing, if I have any representation of loops G prime, its character gives a section of that, so I can think of it as a section of the kth tensor power of some vector bundle. So this is going to be the character of W, a representation of loops G prime of level K. Okay. So I have those two things. Well, now what I want to do is I want to think about theta over sigma. What is theta over sigma? Well, it's a section of the bundle L of V to the K, okay, over L of V tensor I of V. But L of V, this is really just C2 of V, and this is just C2 of V prime. So this is L of K times C2 of V prime. And it's a theorem that if those two things are equal, then there is a Tom class, or a class, in the elliptic cohomology of x minus v. The v was in the denominator, so it's minus v. I'm thinking of v as being like the tangent bundle. So for the Pontryagin-Tom map, you want to get the Tom space of minus the tangent bundle. Anyway, there's a class in the elliptic cohomology of this whose Euler class sort of which corresponds to the sigma orientation twisted by theta. Theta of V prime. Okay, so the construction of Tom classes in equivariant elliptic cohomology that sort of corresponds to this has this interesting generalization where I can twist in any representation of a loop group I want, provided that the levels match up. Okay. So that was part of string three. And let me to sort of make this seem either more or less mysterious, depending on your point of view, let me sort of offer one way to analyze what this genus is about that might be helpful. So this goes back to the sort of oldest attempts to understand what a string structure was is as being transgressing to a spin structure on the loop space. And what I mean by that is, let's see, so I have my principal bundle P sitting over X, and that means that this has structure group G. That means I get an LG bundle, loops G bundle, over the loop space of X. Now, loops G comes with these interesting central extensions. I should really put, I'll really put an integer. So sometimes the notation for this is L squiddle, but there's one of these for every choice of second Chern class, just like H star of BG. So this twist is really parameterized. These are parameterized by H4 of BG. So maybe to indicate that I'm choosing level 1 or level K, I'll put a little 1 here. And it's an interesting question. The question of whether this Chern class vanishes is a question of whether there is a principal bundle for this that lists this. It's just like spin structures. Suppose I have such a thing, then I can form Q Q cross over loops G twiddle 1 of this spin representation. Okay. The point is that representation of loops G, quote, of level K, is not actually a representation of loops G. It's actually a representation of loops G twiddle K. Okay. So until I have a loops G twiddle 1 bundle over X, this, I can't form this bundle. But once I do, I can, and there it is. I get that bundle, and the sigma orientation is supposed to be the index of the Dirac operator. The sigma, the Witten genus, is supposed to be the index of the Dirac operator on this spin bundle. Well, once you have this picture, you can sort of replace P with, well, you can do the same thing now if you had a level K bundle. Okay. And now instead of taking a level 1 representation, I can take W, my level K representation. So I can build a vector bundle over the loop space based on this representation. And the point is that even if I can't build those bundles because these classes are non-zero, if these classes equal each other, then I can build the associated virtual vector bundle. And that's the thing whose class is being constructed here. Okay. So those these elliptic genera twisted by representations of loop groups have been around for a long time. But one thing they didn't have was a physical interpretation, and now they do, and that's this fiber WZW models of Distler and Sharp. So, let's see. Remember that the WZW model, that's a quantum field theory of surfaces in G. Okay, maps of surfaces into our connected compact Lie group G. And this thing gives rise to the Verlinde algebra. This is how you construct the representations of loop groups in physics. On the other hand, the elliptic genus, the Witten genus, comes from studying a nonlinear sigma model of surfaces moving in X. Okay, that's how we get the Witten genus classically. And how do you combine these two things? Well, sure enough, remember that there's this principal bundle P. Okay, I have my G equivarian principal bundle here. I'm sorry, my G principal bundle here. And so what I should do, say Distler and Sharp, is study a nonlinear sigma model of strings moving in P, okay, which in the x direction is my nonlinear sigma model. And if I pretend that P is x cross G, then the contribution to the action from the G part, that's a WZW thing. And they write such a thing down, and they ask, when is that theory well-defined? And they get exactly the condition that K times this Chern class is equal to this Chern class, and so forth. And then they just assert that the elliptic genus is obviously the one from Liu's paper and mine. Okay, so there's still something to be done there, and I think that's quite interesting. But let me tell you something. Let me just point out something really cool about this. So it really focuses attention on this, a quantum field theory of strings moving in P. I want to make two points about this. One is that this looks a lot like a family of quantum field theories over X. Okay? And I don't have anything much to say about those, except to say that Stefan Stoltz and Peter Teichner were very careful when they set up their sort of geometry of quantum field theory to make sure that we could understand quantum field theories we could say what a quantum field theory was varying in a family. And all I'm saying is that here is a physical one. Okay, this is a physical example of a quantum field theory varying a family of quantum field theories over X. And I think it'd be an interesting thing to do to try to set this up in sort of the language of Stoltz-Tiger. Let me make another point about this, which is it focused my attention on something that I'd been thinking in the back of my mind for years but had never completely resolved, which is I emphasized when I wrote this out by making it green that part of what was interesting about what John Greenleaf and I managed to do was to build this map. Everything depended on having a map here which you could use to pull back this structure and get this stuff associated with elliptic cohomology of X. Well, it's a bit embarrassing to realize that, of course, if I have this principal bundle, then there's another thing I could do, also motivated by this picture, which is to think about the G equivariant cohomology of P. P is a G space, for goodness sakes. Well, the G equivariant cohomology of anything is always a ring over the G equivariant cohomology of a point, which in spaceland means that I have my map this way. And on the other hand, P is a free G space, so for goodness sakes, these two things must be the same. And it's and this is in honor of Mike Hopkins, it's a theora and of the Fields Institute. It's a theora of myself and Bert Guyot that this diagram commutes, that this gives a much more simple construction of this map. In his talk at the Fields Institute in 2007, Mike used theora to refer to a theorem whose proof he hadn't completely written down. So I'm being just slightly evasive about this. I believe this is one of the things. How can it not be true? It'd be idiotic for it not to be true. So proof by failure of the world to be stupid, I guess, that must be so. As opposed to myself, if I were not stupid, I would have built this map this way 6 or 7 years ago. But there it is. So that sort of makes it really obvious why that the structure that I've described ought to exist. It also, again, focuses your attention on G equivariant elliptic cohomology and this picture. All right. So now, I was sort of muttering about this to my student, David Lipsky, and there's a little bit of a we ought to try to straighten all of we ought to try to straighten out what goes in to writing down the action. At least straighten down, never mind actually the physics of the actual physics of building some Hilbert space or stuff like that. Let's just at least try to see what goes into writing down the action rigorously that Distler and Sharp write down for this theory. And there's actually a history to this. I didn't think it would be very much of a project because, you see, in some of the oldest work that goes into making sense of WZW models and so forth, there's a really beautiful paper of Berlinski and McLaughlin. Okay, there's this paper from circa 19. Oops. There's this paper from around 1995 of Berlinski and McLaughlin. Which sort of sets up a sort of differential theory of gerbs based on Deligne cohomology, or maybe and Deligne cohomology, to analyze, for example, central extensions of loop groups. In that paper, now there's that paper has an interesting feature. I've read it many times, which is to say that I've read the first three or four sections many times, and I always get to the fourth or fifth section, then I can't figure out what they're talking about. But it's clearly about this, okay? Because then they start talking about two gerbs and saying that for this, so what's the key point here? A key point is that to build this central extension, you need an element, a differential form H, a degree 3 form whose class in BG is this integral class that you're interested in. Okay? So there are some pains to describe the geometry of this degree 3 form as the curving or something like that of a gerb. That's sort of what they're up to. And then they ask, okay, well, let's see. Suppose that I had a principal G bundle over X. Now I want to know, is there a degree 3 form on this, which on every fiber restricts to give my preferred degree 3 form? And the obstruction is a degree 4 class on X. That's the Pontryagin class. And of course, that's exactly what you need here, right? Because, of course, Distler and Sharp, they didn't care about which fiber you were in. They just wrote in their formula, their action just contains terms like the integral of nu. Okay. So obviously, the first thing you've got to do to analyze this is to work out exactly this issue of whether you can find a global form here that restricts in this way. Well, so I asked David Lipsky to go think about this and tell me, and he came back and told me the following. He told me a wonderful, wonderful story, which, while related to this, is somehow much better and not only addresses this question, but sort of really tells us a lot about co-cycle data. And this is a question mark, and enriched topological field theories. So let me draw a picture here to tell you so that the notation for what I'm about to write makes sense. So there's this thing I mentioned, this Deligne complex. So what do? You have your space X, and it has a cover by some set U alpha. So in this direction, I think everybody does this the other way. I'm going to put the check direction. Now, in this direction, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a sequence of sheaves, and the sheaves that I'm going to put are the circle-valued functions, and then one forms, and then two forms, etc. And this is D-log. So the cohomology that I'm talking about is sort of this, the cohomology of this double complex, which is sort of check cohomology of these sheaves in this direction, and this Deligne cohomology or whatever, the cohomology of this complex in the other, essentially some kind of Durham cohomology kind of thing. So let's see, what does it mean to give an element in total degree 1? Well, here I have G alpha beta, and they have to go to 0, okay? So those are the transition functions for a line bundle. And here I have a bunch of local one forms, A alpha, okay? And check of them is D log G alpha beta. This is exactly the local expression of a connection. Okay? A connection on a line bundle, well, one way to give it is to trivialize the line bundle and then give a bunch of one forms which express the connection on the open sets, which are compatible in this way. And so check one cycles correspond to line bundles with connection. Okay. In degree, if I go up one degree, okay, if I insisted in addition in having 0 in this direction, that would be saying that the connection is flat, right? Because each of these one forms would be have d of it be 0. I'm not interested in that, so I'm going to truncate at this level for this case. Okay. So I am going to allow this. This is pink, so I'm happy about it, but this one I'm ignoring. What happens at the 2 level? Well, at the 2 level, what I have here, okay, same in that kind of analysis, says that what goes here, if I look at a two-cycle, again truncated, corresponds to a gerb with connected structure and curving. So that's a lot of words. Let's just say gerb with differential structure. Okay. So it's reasonable to imagine that these higher cycles, what I want to claim is that these higher cycles, I want to sort of suggest that they're good models for, at least for the purposes of actions in physics, for N-gerbs. thing I'm going to assert, and this is a sort of, I want to sort of view elements of n, this is degree one, n plus one of x. So this complex usually goes by the name, it has, D here stands for Deligne, and I don't, by the T, I just don't just mean this, I mean this and this and this, okay? But now I'm going to truncate it. So for the one case, for example, I truncated at degree one, okay, when n equals zero, okay? This is a model for, that was a, when n equals zero, this is a line model, that's a zero gerb. So this is a model. These are n gerbs. These are sort of co-cycle n gerbs with differential structure. Okay, and all this stuff, I'm just going to call them n-gerbs. It's too much work to. So that's the model. What does David do? David shows. So David constructs a map which associates, so suppose that sigma is an oriented d-dimensional surface. And X is a space. David constructs a map, which, a family of maps, one for every n and every sigma, that goes from the check chains on x in degree n plus d, with coefficients in the Deligne complex truncated at r plus d, and it spits out something in the check complex in degree n for x. The mapping space is sigma into x with coefficients in, which again sits this down by d. Now various authors have considered sort of integration kind of maps like this. But what David did that's wonderful is he set this up so carefully that now the following is also true. Oh, shoot. I guess I don't need much of that. This is the thing that's really sort of remarkable about this construction. If rho is the inclusion of the boundary of sigma into sigma, okay, and rho could, the boundary could certainly be empty, then I better copy so that I get that. And there's this chain homotopy formula. That relates the thing for the mapping space out of sigma to the thing for the mapping space out of the boundary of sigma. Okay, where this is the differential in the Deligne complex. So let me give you an example of what kind of thing this encodes much more easily than before. And then I'll conclude by sort of pointing out David's observation, which is it goes a long way to allowing you to set up sort of field theories based on this kind of check data, enriched field theories for 0 through d-dimensional, the 0 through d-dimensional Bordesen category. So as a sort of lower level example than that, let's suppose that n is 1. Okay. So And let's suppose that I've got A, which is an element of Z2 of X with coefficients in this Deligne complex truncated at degree 2. Okay. So N is 1 up top there. So this is like a, this is co-cycle data. This is a gerb with differential structure on X. Okay. Well, let's see. Let's suppose that C is a circle loop, okay, or it's a disjoint union of one manifold. Then I can compute T sub C of A, and that is an element of Z1 of X to the C with coefficients in the same thing, but now shifted down by 1, because when you evaluate on a 1 thing, the N here represents the degree of the output, okay, and the bottom thing tells you the amount of the degree shift. What is this? Well, look, that's just something in here. Okay, this is a line bundle. This is a line bundle over the loop space. Okay. So it gives an unusually simple way of saying this thing that given a gerb on X, you get a line bundle over the loop space. Okay, but even more impressive is what this formula tells you. Okay, because now, suppose that my C is the boundary of a two-manifold. Now suppose that C is the boundary of sigma. Okay? Then I can compute T, now the output degree is zero because I shift down by two, sigma, okay, of my A. Well, let's see, what do I know about that? I know that d this plus tau sigma something of dA is equal to tau 1 C of A restricted to sigma. But A was a gerb, it was a cycle, cocycle, so this part's zero. What is this telling you? This is telling you that the line bundle that we constructed sitting over the, oh, excuse me, this is telling you that the line bundle that we constructed sitting over X over the loop space becomes trivial when I restrict to that. Okay. In fact, it's trivialized by precisely this. Well, that's a well-known theorem. And it plays a fundamental role, for example, in the construction of the fusion product on the Verlinde algebra. Okay. But I think this is far and away the most organized and easy account of it I've ever seen. Okay. So that's really cool. I really am very happy about that formula because, to be honest, I've never really understood any of the other proofs that this line bundle becomes trivial when restricted to the mapping space X to sigma. But you see, you can sort of play this game where associated to a bunch of points. So let's P be a zero manifold. And let's suppose again that I have A, this element, this N plus 1 gerb in cycle form. Okay, if P is a zero manifold, then I can take T sub P of A. And that doesn't shift degree at all because it's a zero manifold. And this is supposed to give me a gerb associated to P, an N gerb associated to P, sitting over the mapping space from X into P. And if P is oriented, then it really gives me, this gerb is really given as P minus, I can look at the two oriented pieces, P minus and P plus. Now if I have a circle that goes from P minus to P plus, then sure enough, T sub N, T upper N C of A, sure enough does give me sort of the data of some kind of holonomy that goes from here to here. But if I have two such things, then what do I get? Well, I can take their union. Let's let C be equal to C0 bar, the reversed orientation union C1. Okay, that's a boundaryless thing. And so, sure enough, tau sub C in degree N of A, what is that? Well, that is an element of C N of X to the C with coefficients in TD truncated to N. What is that? Well, remember that since C is boundaryless, this is in fact a cycle again. Okay, since C is boundaryless, this is a cycle, excuse me, because A was a cycle as well, and so this is an N minus 1 gerb. And it's the N minus 1 gerb of maps from this holonomy to the other holonomy. And now if I have an N that fills in this picture, I can now write down T sub N, okay? Now this is an N, this will end up in N minus degree, N minus 1, and that's some kind of holonomy data. Again, just presented in Czech cocycle format that goes from this thing to this thing. So it looks a little, I think the picture really is as rich as I described, although if you try to tease out what this means, I'm really writing down things about very, very complicated Czech cocycles. But it is providing exactly the kind of data that you would need to set up, write down the sequence of actions, so to speak, the formulas involving integrals and differential forms and so forth, of an enriched topological field theory. Notice that unlike the sort of usual discussion of an enriched topological field theory, in this case, just for jollies, I started in degree zero. And sure enough, in top degree, you're going to get a number. Because by the time you apply the top degree guy, you're just going to get some element in the... So it has a lot of interesting features. There's a great deal of work to be done to sort out what it means in the context of sort of really sophisticated, well-organized approaches to enriched field theory. But it's a fantastic thing, and it's certainly more than enough for me and my friends to worry about, to sort of spend some time worrying about Distler and Sharp's fibered WVW models. So, okay, I'll stop there.